This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
On the internet. I'm Rick Angies.
I'm Jack Smith.
Well, Jack, PRI show. Let's kick it off with that. What an accumulation of a way to spend a lot of money.
It's a place for people who need help with panic attacks to go get over them.
Oh, Lord.
Orlando, that's the Orange County Convention Center. How big is it, Keith? How huge is that place?
Is 1 million square feet too small? Because after you run across that thing 7, 8, 9, 10 times, it feels like you've run a marathon.
I went from, we went from one end to the other. And if it wasn't for the signs that said north-south, you got lost. I mean, you would get lost until you found the DHL setup down there. And you were still lost. It was amazing, all that stuff put together. Big-time representation for dirt racing there.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of dirt cars there. A lot of drag racing. But the one that caught us, Jack, as we were walking by, was the dragster boat.
Yeah, 4 second quarter mile on water.
3-inch fuel line.
7,000 horsepower, 5 Gs on water.
Yeah. I found a video of those guys on YouTube. They're going to be on with us next month.
In January.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a little boat racing here at Real Racing USA, so that ought to be a lot of fun. But it was just the accumulation of people, the people that we saw there that we haven't seen in years, and unbelievable. Big Daddy Don Garlett sitting there signing autographs.
That's right. You got his picture taken. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
And we got to put them pictures up online. I forgot all about that.
Right. Deaf as hell.
Shirley was there.
Shirley was there?
Yeah.
I didn't see Shirley.
Yeah. I told Rick, I said, get his Well, Rick was getting his autograph anyway because he's an autograph hound. I said, let's line him up for the show. He goes to talk to him. Not.
No. He can't hear. He can't hear.
Too many trips down the... down the sled there, man.
Yeah, no doubt. But then we on to the PRI Sprint and Midget Classic show Friday night. Some great racing, but I tell you what, the highlight of the night was Dave Westerman walking up to Marty Little and saying, "Now we've got 1,000 years of racing history accumulated right here."
Too funny.
Huh? Yeah, it was great. It was great.
The best thing about that night was it was warm.
It was a nice night.
Yeah.
It was a real nice night.
Tonight, and we'll come back to this in just a minute,
yeah.
PRI, but tonight we have some pretty good lineup of guests here, Rick.
Yeah.
Jimmy Mars.
The one, the only Jimmy Mars.
Wow.
14 wins this year, and Jimmy doesn't run those little tiny races. Jimmy runs the big ones, so he's got 14 races under his belt. We'll have him on tonight.
Scott Cannon Jr. Last week on Straight Lining with Stevie, we had... senior on, and now we're going to have Scott Cannon Jr. on, talk some drag racing, man.
Sounds like the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree with that one.
No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, it's right there, man. It's right there. And then we're also going to talk to Tom Ast from the USLMRA. What's that, you ask? That's these crazy guys who race lawnmowers at, like, really high, insane speeds all over the country. And funny things people do with machinery.
Just something about a guy that races a lawnmower.
But I'll tell you, it's like we had one of the guys on another show we do here on the Real Racing USA yesterday, and it reminded me, we were talking to this guy, and it reminded me of some stuff. These guys will have big crowds, like 5,000 and 6,000 people come out. You know, there's some stuff some promoters of stock car races and other forms of motorsports might learn from these cats, man.
And, you know, the other thing I've always noticed about lawnmower racing is these guys, they don't want for sponsors, man. They got sponsors all over them lawnmowers.
He's still laughing. Yep.
They probably don't use your equipment there in the lawnmower races.
All right, let's do the breaking news. We're going to have Mickey Kane from the ASA Southeast Tour on at 8:30.
Now, for people who don't know, Jack,
The
majority of people who are probably tuned into us know the ASA
late model series
that Ron and Sandy Barney run, and this isn't that. This is we had Dennis Huth on a month or so back, and this is part of his deal. And these aren't great late models; these are super late models and pro late models. It looks like. Fairly similar to what they're running at the Snowball Derby. And remember, we talked to Augie Grill about the resurgence of late model racing. And he said we had all agreed that there needs to be something put together so there's a touring series for the super late models. Not the great late models, but the super late models. Augie agreed since the demise of the All-Pro Series that there really hasn't been anything for these guys to travel for.
Well, today they came out with their 15 race and television schedule, 15 race Southeast United States schedule for the ASA Southeast Tour. And how many races? What, 11 are televised? Is that what I got?
I believe that's what it is. And pretty impressive group of tracks here. Watermelon, Capital Speedway, and South Georgia Motorsports. Yep. Which everybody knows. Bronson is on the list. Hickory is on the list. Sonoya, Dillon Motor Speedway, Music City, Concord, Anderson. And what's really impressive is they threw in a road course.
Which one?
It's a road course that they test on in South Carolina. The NASCAR guys test on. And they're throwing a road course race in for these super late models, which we used to have down here at Sebring.
That's right, and it was fun.
It was a lot of fun to watch these guys try and move around that road course. I remember the Fast Truck Series was there that weekend. We were at that one curve where none of them could make it through that curve.
That was just too funny.
None of them.
Yeah, that was too funny. Keith, we went down to this one turn, and we just stayed this one turn all day. And every time these trucks would come down in there, we would take pictures because it was always
chaotic.
It was FUBAR.
To the max.
So Mickey Kane's going to be on with us a little bit later at the show anyway to talk about this ASA. This is late breaking news, man. It didn't hit the press just a couple hours ago.
Yep, just came out a couple hours ago. That's going to be a good one.
So, Keith, let's go back to this PRI deal, man. Now, what kind of preparations do you – you're in the safety business, and we'll talk about that. You can talk about that. And,
right.
And what do you preparations do you make? What do you expect to accomplish? What do you accomplish out of this kind of an event?
Well, this show is a little different because we don't have a booth there. And unless you're in the mainstream with a variety of safety equipment for different things and have a large viewing audience to start with, a lot of people aren't going to know you. But when you're starting out with some new equipment coming in, you got to bang on some doors. You know, anybody with anything new like that. But this is not something new we've been working on. I've been working on this probably since 2003 when I introduced it the first time around at PRI with Brian and at Butler Seats. And it took a long time, mainly because of the larger sanctioning bodies either not recognizing the need for the tools that we're building or just saying, well, we're not going to do anything about it until somebody else makes some noise. So this time around, I went on the offensive, and I said, all the seat builders had the option of putting the Zipflex saw that we've designed into all their seats versus just one company, because what's happened since 2001 and all of the issues that came up with Cup and Bush and Truck with the full impact head surround seats have now trickled down to the lower divisions and the sportsman issues, and all those problems that we said that were going to happen back in 2001 have now hit the local guys.
Yeah, now your product is basically a something that fits into a seat and the restraint that enables the safety guys to get that to driver quicker.
That's one of the ones we came out with, but that was the main one that we have put a lot of focus and work into. That is, we talked to a lot of drivers that were at the track and all the sanctioning bodies that I could find at that show, which I said, like, I ran across the place a dozen times, if not any. And they all said, hey, this is a great idea. How come nobody came up with it before? And I said, I don't care as long as I did, as long as you get the stuff from me.
Right.
Well, we put it out there because it was something that needed to be addressed from the track crew point of view and the racer's point of view. And a lot of guys were hesitant about going with the newer seats because of the issues that they were causing. So we've kind of reverse engineered this from the racer point of view, going back saying, hey, look, we've got a deal now that the seats will help reduce the injuries, which they have. But when you do wreck, it's not a question of if you're going to wreck. It's a question of when you're going to wreck.
Like riding Orlando with Bill Green.
Don't be scared of one of these seats. It's going to help you. But if you do get wrecked, we got a way to help get you out. And that wasn't happening. So that's what we pushed on. We pushed it with a lot of people. And they jumped on board. And let's hopefully they put their money where their mouth is.
Hey, you were with us back in May on Real Racing USA.
Yes,
and, sir. We had the seat there, and we looked at it all, talked about it for a long time, and you demoed it out how it works. And that interview actually is available in the archives here, but on Real Racing USA. But what progress have you made since then?
Well, what I did was we pre-sized. The last time I was up at Butler's, and we did some work up there before I moved down here. We went up there and did a lot of R&D with them and pre-sized a lot of their heads around, so they've got numerous style and size heads for all the different seats they use. So to make it easier for both the OEM as a manufacturer to install those ahead of time, or the racer to do it himself, or a dealer that wants to do it, we pre-size them so you can actually put these kits in as a retrofit. So you can actually put this in as a retrofit now, instead of just a brand new seat installs an OEM, to make it a little more versatile across the board for all of the seat manufacturers to have it, no matter what kind of seat you have. And sat tight with several of the foam manufacturers, BSCI, Matt Ray up there. They've been very big innovators of foam technology. Bald Spot Motorsports with the India, the composite poured foam seats. So we ran across the board for everybody that was working on this, and anybody that had an issue, well, actually everybody had an issue with it and had no way to figure out how to take care of it. And I said, well, I got the answer here. And I'm going to be sizing up several seat sizes this week and sending some wire out to, I think, a half a dozen seat manufacturers and sanctioning bodies to say, let's try this.
How would you describe this product, like, in one sentence? Well, how would you describe what the product is?
Think of a funky steel piece of dental floss.
And what's
you're
it
like, what?
And what's it do?
Well, what it does is it's designed to cut the foam out of the head surrounds in one piece by the track crew when you get wrecked, before anybody has to take a cutting tool to the car, the truck, the chassis, the head surround, whatever, to make it easier to get rescue workers at you. For, you know, if you're out cold, knocked unconscious, if you have a chest injury or something like that. And let's face it, that's reality. We're not trying to scare anybody. But racing's, if you're not willing to take the risks, don't get in the seat.
That's
but
right.
We also want to try and make it a little easier and safer, so that if you do get into a situation, you're going to come out with the least amount of damage as possible, because most of us have to go to work the next day.
Okay.
If you ever look in a Rocket race car, you know, those dirt late models and stuff,
right,
that are factory made race cars.
Yep.
If you look in the driver's compartment, there's a warning there that says you're probably going to die doing this. I mean, that's basically what this thing says.
Yep.
It's that dangerous. This sport is that dangerous.
Yeah. Okay. And that has something to do with probably why the insurance companies have come in with the 14-year-old kind of rule in some circumstances. And we'll come back and talk with Keith more about this, the seat and some of the other innovations, and also some of these insurance deals later on in the show. How about
right.
that? And let's take a break here and come back and talk to Rick Bristol real quick about this upcoming race at this charity race that he's been working on forever. You know, all around the country, people do things like this, of this
right.
nature.
Yeah.
Nobody, I've never run across anybody anywhere in the country at any level that puts more heart and soul into it than Rick.
It's a one-man gang, too, man. I mean, he's a one-man gang.
Yeah. And he's earned our respect. We'll be right back. We have a public service announcement from Dennis Huth coming up, so you want to listen to this.
It's a presentation of Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today, 5starbodies.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Oh, that's right, mother...
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out loud.
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, old Sultan of Shouting, because while there may be no I in team, thanks to you, there's always an F and a U. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
We're back at Real Racing USA Live, and on the line with us right now, Mr. Rick Bristol. Rick, how you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, man. So this weekend's the big weekend, huh, brother?
The big deal, man. It's what we've been working for since back in June, and it's here, and the phones have rang off the hook today, and just getting crazy. So, but we're getting down to the crunch time, and... We're excited. It's going to be tremendous. And unfortunately, we've had a couple of things over the last couple of days that have happened because of an insurance issue that's kind of put a little bit of a damper on the deal. But all of the people handled it with class and have donated their entry fees to the family. And so, through the bad part of it, it still showed that everybody's focus is on what we need to be about, and that's about helping this family.
Yeah. You know, tell everybody a little bit about what happened in this past week.
Well, this past week, the insurance company that controls the fast car tracks and series made it effective immediately that no one under the age of 14 could compete in a series or at any of the tracks anymore. And so that, of course, was 1 week before we were getting ready to have the Kid State Championship truck race. And then, unfortunately, we worked over the weekend, and they worked on Monday. I'm trying to see if there was something we could do to be able to do it, but it just wasn't going to happen. So I had to make phone calls last night and tell parents and truck owners and kids that they couldn't race, and that was kind of a sucky deal, you know. But unfortunately, nothing we can do about that. And then it also today now affects what we had set up with Jim Higginbotham. They're not going to allow us to do the ride-along deal either. So, unfortunately, that's, unless he has his own insurance, which I talked to Jim and he didn't, we're not allowed to do that part either. So, unfortunately, insurance companies are starting to clamp down a lot, and I guess we heard today that the phone calls are going to other racetracks right now, too. So, things are tightening up, and unfortunately, it just kind of affected this deal with only a week to go.
This is 14 and under, or you can't race if you're 14? What is it?
Anybody under 14? Under 14,
so,
you have to be 14 to race.
Okay,
that's with a signed waiver from your parents.
Now, how many teams did that actually affect in the race that you were going to have?
Well, I only had 8 that paid and pre-entered, but we knew of another probably 4 teams that were probably going to come. But in essence, it affected the 8 for sure that had already paid their entry, and of course, the kids were excited. And I think it was put best by Mr. Cohen. With Ram Transport, he was the one sponsoring the race, and basically, you know, he put it this way. He said it's kind of like you as a child getting all excited all year long waiting for Christmas, and then with a week to go, they tell you, oh, we're not having Christmas this year. Kind of one of those deals, you know. The kids were excited. It was a chance for them to shine and have a big race, and so it made it kind of tough. And you know, but unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about it now. And like I said, all of the parents and owners and kids handled it with class. They've still donated what they paid in their entry, and then I've, of course, invited them and given them free passes, whatever they need to come. So, and also, I got a call today from a gentleman who's the manager up at the Daytona Speed Park at the go-kart track, and they have a drag strip thing up there. And he called me today, and he says, I want to make sure those 8 kids get a VIP race pass, and that's a $100 VIP race pass. It's good for a couple rides on the Nitro Dragster, 4 go-kart rides, tokens for, you know, for the games and stuff. So he wanted to make sure they got something, and you know, we're going to present those to them if they're there at the event on Saturday night and stuff. And but like I said, it kind of stunk, but at the same time, everybody's handled it, and we're kind of getting, you know, getting on with it. A couple of those trucks, one of the kids was 14, and he'll be able to move over and try to make the field for the pro truck race, which is going to be actually a feat now because we're up to 34 pre-entered, and I have, if everybody shows up that talked to me today, we'll have about 40 trucks right now. So I think it's going to be good, and we'll just go on with it. The kids will be there and support it. So.
Orlando Speed World, 14th and 15th, coming up.
Yeah. It's really coming up.
Fast.
But Friday we'll open up things in the morning, and the trucks will go through their tech process from 12 to 3. We'll have practice from 2 to 5, and then we qualify the trucks Friday night at 7:30, and the top 20 trucks will be locked in and impounded for the night. And then the next day we'll have a second round qualifying. Practice, and then a happy hour for the 20 that are locked in, and then we'll have second round qualifying where we'll take 10, and then we'll put 2 in by a last chance race or races depending on how many trucks we have.
Cool.
So that'll make a you know, big deal. We're going to start 32 trucks on Orlando Speed World, so that's going to be a full up speedway.
That'll be great, man.
Yeah, that'll be a wild race to say the least.
Cool deal because we do it like a NASCAR race. We have the transponders and receivers, and so it's all electronically scored, and then we have the lucky dog pass that we do, so it's a pretty cool deal. I mean, the racing was awesome last year, and I mean, to watch trucks running side-by-side passing lap trucks going three wide in the corners. I mean, it was that good, and it happened a lot. So,
and all for a good cause.
Yes, sir, it's all for a good cause. We want to help out Kaylee and her family. They've had a rough year, and they lost their home and filed bankruptcy trying to keep up with medical bills. And, of course, Kaylee is battling a heart disease that doctors are not giving her much chance with. But, you know, doctors didn't give Tommy much of a chance. They only gave him a 5% chance of the transplant that he got last year to work. And Tommy is now back in school, and he's doing really well. So, there's only one in control of that, and we're just praying that Kaylee comes through this, and we're just going to help them out the best we can, help the family out with whatever we can, and they can use it to pay off bills or keep the treatment going or whatever they need to do with it. But we've asked the racers and the fans that want to, they'll be making donations, however, by through raffles or our concessions, or you know, we're going to send the drivers through the stands both nights, and so they'll help with that. But we've also told them if they want to come and bring something for Kaylee, toys or clothes. She's a 14-month-old baby. She's a big girl for her age. She's 14 months old, and so people can bring clothes. They can bring toys. They can bring gift cards to, like, Babies R Us, Toys R Us, you know, Walmart, Kmart, you know, any place that they can use, Publix, you know, Winn-Dixie, any stores that they can use maybe to buy formula, diapers, whatever they're going to need. So they can bring those, and sometimes people would rather do something like that, and they'll be able to present those gifts there when we do that night. So a lot of ways that we can help, and we're excited. We think it's going to be a big deal. I've passed out a ton of tickets, flyers. I've gotten some help lately with a couple of articles, and I actually got called today. The local Bright House Network has aired some commercials on a couple of the stations, and we've begun to get calls off of those today. So, so we're excited about that. Those are public service commercials that they did for free for us.
Right.
We hope to have a big announcement in January about what they're going to help us do for next year's event.
All right. Awesome deal. So cool. The Charity Truckers 200 at Orlando Speed World, December 14th and 15th, Friday night, Saturday.
I know, Jack, you're going to be there, right?
You got that right. I'll be there Saturday, man. About
Bruce coming?
Who?
Rick coming?
Yeah, we'll get him to come. He don't want
to
come.
I'm going to do my best to be there.
He wants to come, but he doesn't want to come because he's getting lazy. You know, it's like getting close to Christmas, and he's getting lazy. But we'll get him to come.
Well, you guys are on the list, so come on up and have a good time.
Yeah, we'll see you Saturday afternoon, man, and December 14th to 15th, Orlando Speed World.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye.
You know, we say it a lot, but God, he's got to be one of the hardest working guys in stock car racing, just for that one race. He just, he's nonstop with that thing. I mean, when they throw the checkered on this year's race, he's already working on next year's.
Yeah, it's amazing, man, how much he puts into it, I'll tell you. I'll tell you what other products, Keith, do you work on in the safety deal?
Well, I'm working with Craig from Track Rescue. He and I working together on, and actually after PRI, some new things have come down about a new national short track racing safety program that's going to be put together.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? And how's that going to work?
Well, it's been in the works for a while through the efforts of SFI, which everybody knows SFI is
right.
The main group. You know, an offshoot of SEMA from years ago that actually rates the safety equipment that the oil racers use. And they're actually pushing together now to generate a short track program. They've done the NHRA, SCCA, AMA, a ton of different series as far as formulating a safety program that the racers can actually follow, the track crews and the speedways, et cetera. And now they're working on a short track program. So I know Craig, myself, and there's a few other people involved in it that have been working on this for quite a while who finally got a green light on some things to work on to move this ahead. So it's actually kind of a cool deal to look forward to. So when you got a, like me, I'll probably never ever drive because I got a bum neck. So I got to try and figure out a way to stay involved in the sport,
right,
my career in, you know, fire service, and then building cars and chassis and the other stuff. So trying to put it all together in one deal. So stay involved in from the industry and from the seats and restraints and everything else.
You know what was really cool about the PRI show is how many booths were just dedicated to nothing but safety?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nothing but safety. Seats, belts, yep. Fire suits, yep. Helmets. I mean, the list went on and on. Restraint systems. It's amazing.
John Force's crash, Chris and the guys over at ISP, they did a big, it must have had a 50-inch flat screen? I don't know. It was a huge flat screen.
It's huge.
And he did a interview with that, and his daughter Ashley's car was in there. They did a chassis section in there where she wrecked. So Chris is one of the ones that's been doing a lot with drag racing safety, you know, as well as Brian with Butler on the other end, as well as everybody that's involved and has done something to do something, contributed towards that in some regards. And it's a competitive business even doing that stuff.
Right.
You know, because like, I got something new.
All right, we'll get back to that in a minute. Right now on the line with us, the USLMRA, Lawnmower Racing Association, Mr. Tom Ast. How you doing, Tom?
Real good. How you doing?
All right, doing real good. So tell us about lawnmower racing.
You got some big news, too, Tom, don't you?
Well, we've got a few things. We've got we just put an associate chapter in. The very first one was Nasgrass down here in Florida. They're just getting started and are becoming a part of the USMRA. And then we've got a doubleheader national points race coming to Avon Park, Florida, here in beginning of April, 5th and 6th.
Now, I've witnessed some of these races. I mean, the turnout is unbelievable, the competition you get at these races.
We'll probably have somewhere around 80, 85 mowers at this national points race. It usually is a pretty good event.
Right, and I see you might be getting some coverage on speed.
Hopefully. You never know with those things.
Right.
The Nationals, which are held in Mansfield or in Ohio every year, Labor Day weekend, is always taped for something. This year was Outdoor Town.
Uh-huh.
So when do things kick off for mower racing in your neck of the woods?
Actually, we race from September till June. We take the summer off because it's so blame hot, and then we go national racing during the summer months and get up north where it's a little bit cooler.
What kind of classes of racing do you have?
Actually, I've got six classes that range anywhere from the IMO class, which is limited. It's a stock engine governed at 3650 RPM, 8-to-1 drive ratio, 16-inch tires. Basically, that's the IROC series of lawnmower racing, and it boils down to the driver. And then they vary in speed up to the BP and FX, which are upwards of 60 miles an hour.
So, like my 14 horsepower Murray, what, where does that fit in?
Overhead valve. If it's overhead valve, it would be in the CP class. You can get it up to somewhere around 40, 45 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour.
Tell him he's got to pull the blade off of it first.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That's the first rule. No blades. We actually use the deck shell itself, so it still looks like a lawnmower. And the mowers are lowered, they're widened. We take safety very seriously. Helmets, neck braces, long sleeve shirts, long pants, boots. We're real safety conscious.
Now, what kind of fuel are they running in these things?
We run regular pump gas. We introduce a little bit of racing fuel. Obviously, that comes out of a pump, but no alcohol. We stay with regular fuel so you can actually see it if you have a fire. And we don't have the people trained to deal with alcohol.
So you don't have, like, top fuel dragsters and lawnmowers, right?
No. We don't get quite that crazy. We're using on a 20-horse Vanguard Twin. We're getting almost 50 horsepower out of them.
That's spinning one around a few times.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been in 6 years now.
Yeah. How did you
pick lawnmowers?
Yeah.
Well, we used to race mini stocks here in Auburndale, my father-in-law and I.
Uh-huh.
And the mini stocks got so blame expensive when they went from what would be a mini stock bomber now, or a mini bomber, to the full blown race chassis that they are today. And we were looking for something a little bit less expensive to get into. And a buddy of mine told me, come out and check out this lawnmower race. So I went to one. And boy, it was just like Will Smith over at on that Independence Day.
Uh-huh.
Just in that spaceship. And I said, yeah, I just got to have me one of these.
Now, what's the highest class lawnmower? What can a person expect to invest in, say, a whole season with that thing?
Depending on how far you travel, our point system takes our best four finishes plus what we do at Nationals. To build a mower and go race for a year, you're probably looking top line BP somewhere around $10,000
to $15,000. Wow, lawnmower racing. Any?
You compare that to trying to run like Hooters Cup, and
yeah, that's a big difference. Yeah. I see they travel a lot.
Yeah, I've been anywhere from Maryland to Minnesota, Ohio, North Carolina. We go quite a way. Yeah,
what's the fan base like?
Oh, usually we're in front of fairs, festivals, that type of thing.
Right.
We get some pretty good fan bases. 700-800 people in the crowds.
Is it all racing on dirt and grass?
It's all dirt and grass. We don't do any concrete or asphalt.
Yeah, that'd be hell if you fell off.
I tried to talk some people into doing that, and they just wouldn't have nothing to do with it.
The more you got to remember, it has absolutely no suspension. And then when you set it up for dirt, obviously we're running a little bit of toe out for dirt.
Right.
And that makes the mower very, very twitchy and very weird to drive on asphalt or concrete.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be.
I've done a couple of exhibitions on asphalt raceways, Charlotte County Speedway for one, which I hit 72 mile an hour there. And there's a bump going into turn three that's just real, real unsettling.
Well, especially with no suspension. I mean, you become, your spinal cord becomes a suspension.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and when you hit that, you only hit it once because it puts you into a four-wheel drift towards that concrete wall, and that's just not a real, real pleasant feeling.
I wouldn't think so, especially without any doors.
Yeah. So, what is the when is the next event coming up that you'll be in, your organization will be involved in?
We have a local chapter race here in Avon Park on January the 12th. Pit gates will open up at 3:00. Spectator gates at 5:00. It's $5 admission, and another $5 to get you into the pits. It's a real good time, a real friendly atmosphere, good people.
That's what I've heard. I mean, I've always heard that it's a totally friendly environment. I've seen a few exhibition races. It just looks like a blast, man.
But it's right down to we don't race for any money. It's all for trophies and bragging rights. So I mean, we're into everybody races. I mean, if something breaks, if somebody has one, it's yours. Not like some of these other venues where, you know, if you break it, somebody may have one, but you might beat me and take my prize money, so you're not getting it. You know what I mean?
Right. So if people want to get a hold of you or they want to check into more of this, how they do that?
You can contact me at it's area code 863-382-1070. Chances are you probably have to leave me a message, but if you do that, I'll get back with you. Or you can check us out at floridalawnracing.net.
Hey, Tom, what do you use to cut your grass with?
My son and a push mower.
There it is. Good talking to you, man.
All right, thank you.
All right, good night, Tom.
Good night.
All right. I forgot. I was going to ask that question. Do you guys mow your own grass?
It's amazing, though. Now, picture this. They put lawnmower racing on speed. Think of all the kinds of motorsports that never make it to speed.
Yeah, well.
Put lawnmower racing and a school bus race together.
Yeah.
See how many people you'd get.
Yeah, and at halftime intermission, you have guys out with weed whackers, like, doing the weed whacker challenge.
Yeah.
Too funny, huh?
Lawnmower figure eight.
But people, you know, it's cool. I went to the one of actually real good event, and there was about 800 people there. And but I do know that they have several events around the state of Florida and elsewhere in other parts of the country that draw literally thousands of people. So
it's a fan. Yeah. I mean,
run what you brung.
People go watch turtles race around in circles.
That's right. They will.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sure
and,
will.
And I'll tell you what, we're gonna come back here in a few minutes and see if we can hook up with Jimmy Mars.
All right. We'll be back on Real Racing USA Live.
This is Shaw Smith, driver of the 17 SS Dirt Late Model, Central Sheds and Trailers Champion for 2007, and you're listening to Inside Florida Racing.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman on the web at thebrakeman.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Oh, that's right, motherfucker.
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out loud.
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, oh Sultan of Shouting, because while there may be no I in team, thanks to you, there's always an F and a U. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today. 5starbodies.com.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
And we are back with Real Racing USA Live this Tuesday night. Rick, you know, last week we had a very interesting guest on Straight Lining with Stevie, the drag racing show we do on Wednesday.
Right.
And that was Scotty Cannon Jr. and talking about his return to pro modified racing. He's been doing Top Fuel. And so tonight we decided we're going to go and see how far the apple falls from the tree. Welcome to Inside Florida Racing, Scott Cannon Jr.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're doing great, man. I know you're stuck up there. I say up there. For most people, it's down there in Gainesville, Florida. you're answering to go home, I suppose.
Not really. It's pretty warm down here, and I guess we're kind of getting used to it.
I gotcha. So, Tell us now you were the pro modified champion in 2007. Is that's great, right?
Yes, that's right.
And so now you and your dad have teamed up, identical cars, and you're going to go try to do it again together. Man, what's that? Is that's basically the gist of it. What? How exciting is that for you?
It's pretty exciting. I've been trying to get a good teammate, and I guess he'd probably make the best one. So, two cars. I mean, you can learn twice as much, and you got just twice as much chance of winning. So, it should be a pretty good deal.
You know, watching your dad, you know, when the pro mod started with those big blowers coming out of the hoods and almost normal looking race cars, you know, it was a wild sight to see. That had to be something growing up with that.
Yeah, I worked on his car, I guess, for the past, I think I worked on his 10 years, and then he let me drive. He wouldn't let me drive, but I learned how to do everything on it. So once I learned how to do everything on it, he gave me my chance, and here we are.
And what's it like climbing in one of these cars? I mean, it's basically looks like a door slammer, almost a pro stock style car, but it's a long ways from that.
Yeah, it's the fastest cars with doors, I'm pretty sure. I think that's right.
Yeah, that's the way they were always promoted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Pro Mod, Scott.
Oh, it's kind of I guess it started out as like in the backwoods of the South, just the fastest cars, and it just eventually turned into these cars and just kept getting bigger and faster and faster. And IHRA picked it up, and I think my dad won the second year Pro Mod, the world championship, and I think he wound up with six. So my family, I guess we've been in it from the beginning.
Now, I've heard that these are probably one of the toughest cars to take down the quarter mile.
Well, it's a short wheelbase, and it's still a regular car, so if you're not careful, you can wind up upside down. That's kind of what happened to me last year.
Tell us a little bit about that.
We wound up at San Antonio, and it went out there, and it went hit the bump in the track. It actually got the car airborne, and I wound up almost in the sand trap, and I wrecked it the 8th mile. But Vanishing Point, they got my car back together, the same one I wrecked, in 2 weeks, and we made Rockingham with the same car and finished the year out with the same car, so it wasn't that bad.
Wow.
Cool.
Now, San Antonio is the 8th mile, right?
It will be this year. It was quarter mile then.
Oh, I got you. So it'll be 8th mile this year. What, now, have you worked with your dad before in terms of, like, going out to the track and actually working together? Have you done this before?
We've never raced against each other, but I worked on his car, and he crew chiefed mine, so we've always worked together. So just next year will be the first time we actually get to race against each other.
Yeah. How do you think that's going to – now, when you go out there and you look over and you see him, is that going to give you a different feeling than if there was somebody else over there?
Nah, I'm pretty sure I want to whoop him about as much as anybody else.
And he'll probably feel the same way, huh?
Yep, so it'll be interesting no matter what.
And how long have you been actually involved in racing yourself, like actually driving the cars?
I started out on bike.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I raced pro stock bike, and for a while there, I guess I drove everything they would let me, and then I was getting my license for the Nitro car, and the deal fell through for it. And he came back to Pro Mod and raced it 1 year, and then he let me drive the next year, and I've been driving our Pro Mod since.
And you had pretty good success in the bikes.
Decent. I didn't get to run the four actually national events, but I raced a lot of outlaw bikes and stuff like that.
What was it like in that Nitro Funny car?
They're fast and hard to drive. I mean, they're a handful.
Yeah. Yeah, I've watched them guys. I've watched in cars on them and stuff, and that's got to be. I mean, once you leave the line, you probably just about can't see anything, right?
No, you can't see anything when you leave the line for a little while, or I couldn't anyway.
Now, what's the difference in the torque, say, in the takeoff of a pro mod to a funny car?
I think they pull around maybe 4 to 5 G's, and on a good run, mine can pull 3 to 3.5.
That's still pushing you back in the seat.
Yep. And we got to shift and stage it, and there's a little more to do in the car I drive now.
And what kind of transmission are you running that?
Lenco.
A Lenco? The 5-speed?
2-speed.
2-speed?
Yep.
Go and go faster, right?
That's all they'll let us have.
What kind of motor's in that thing?
Hemi. Brad Anderson Hemi.
Hemi? What kind of horsepower are you putting out?
I don't know if I need to say that or not.
Oh, okay.
around 2 to 3,000.
2 to 3,000 horsepower and shifting gears. That's unbelievable. What kind of times in a quarter mile?
I went 593 at 242.63 and got the record last year.
Oh, that's cranking it. That is cranking it down the quarter mile.
Do you enjoy working on the cars more, or is it about just going down the track? I mean, which one of those do you get? I mean, is you obviously enjoy working on the cars.
Well, as much work as you have to do on one of these race cars, you have to enjoy it or do it.
How much time, like, in a week for an average week during racing season are you actually turning in wrenches and doing stuff on the cars?
When it's the busy part of race time, we don't get no time off.
Yeah. A lot of work involved in being successful.
Yeah, a lot of work and driving. I think we wind up driving more than we do anything.
Yeah, are these fiberglass bodies?
Mine's carbon fiber, but some people's are fiberglass.
Okay. What's one of these things weigh? I mean, let me ask you this. What kind of rule book do you have for these things?
We can only run 20% over on the blower. We have to weigh 2,700 pounds, and the motors are 526. Certain size blowers, I mean, the rule book, it looks like an encyclopedia for us.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't this start out as almost like an open class?
Yeah, but they just kept getting too fast, and they had to slow them down, I guess, before anybody got hurt.
Yeah. That's amazing how we're slowing them down now instead of trying to go faster.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of car do you run?
Firebird.
A Firebird?
Firebird. Yes.
That's an awesome looking machine.
A 68 Firebird, huh?
Yeah.
And you're going to have them, from what your dad said, they're going to be exactly the same, looking exactly the same.
That's the plan as of right now.
Yeah.
Two of them monsters coming up to the line. That's going to be
that's
wild.
Amazing. Yep, that's absolutely amazing. So when do you get some time off now during this time of the year? I know you've been up here testing and whatnot. Do you have some time off now, or is it just work?
We'll probably take Christmas off.
Yeah. And when's your first event?
April, but we'll go testing probably sometime in January.
Now, you've been testing up in Gainesville just recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right now with the fuel car testing.
Wow. And what's the fuel mixture on these cars? Is it just straight gas, or?
Ours is all alcohol.
Alcohol?
Hmm.
Wow. That's some. You got some sponsors you want to thank, Scott?
Torco. If it wasn't for Torco and Evan, I'd probably be at home cooking hot dogs in our family restaurant.
There you go, man.
You from Carolinas?
What's that?
You from Carolina?
Yes.
Cool. All right, Scott. The junior of drag racing, I guess is what you're called. It's been great having you here on Real Racing USA, and we wish you all the luck in the world this year.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right. Scott Cannon Jr. These machines are just, you know what they remind me of? Remember Big Daddy Rat? Big motor sticking out of the hood.
Yep.
It's
kind of hard to get your head around some of this stuff, man. It really is.
I remember when this class started, though, and I mean, his dad was one of the guys that started this class, and that's what it was. It was all out, whatever you can put into it, make it go. The only rule they had was the doors had to open and close. That was it, besides safety.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going back to Rockingham. We went to Rockingham last March or April or whenever, it was early in the year. And look forward to going back there again this year.
I'm kind of looking forward to going to Rockingham and watching the stock car race.
Yeah, right across the street. You can do them both there.
We got an open invitation from Mr. Hillenberger.
But Hillenberg. Those guys come out there on that line, man, and you have the opportunity to get up close, Keith. It's a breathtaker. No doubt.
Before I did stock car racing, I used to work at the drag strip right there at DeSoto. And I was assistant starter, and you'd stand right between those guys when they do a burnout going past you and leaving the line, and all sound just disappears for a little bit. There is no sound. It's just white sound. And it's a sight to behold for sure.
Yeah. Tell you what, we're going to go take a break here, and we're going to come back. I think we'll hook up with Jimmy Mars. If not, we'll get in touch with Mickey Kane a little bit early for the ASA deal, but we'll be right back.
All right.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
You've given us the real American dream. A tray, 15 feet of food, and a little sign that says, "Go nuts, buddy."
Well, pinch me, I'm dreaming.
Pushing side dish innovation to its limits, you offer creamed everything and 400 flavors of gelatin.
Feed it frenzy.
If there's beef, you'll chip it. If there's chicken, you'll fry it. And if there's gravy, well, then everything's going to be okay.
Thank God for the gravy.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, buffet boy. You know the way to a man's heart and a few hundred tasty ways to challenge it.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
This is Shaw Smith, driver of the 17SS Dirt Late Model. Central Sheds and Trailers champion for 2007, and you're listening to Inside Florida Racing.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the brakeman. The brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman on the web at thebrakeman.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Oh, that's right, motherfucker.
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out loud.
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, old Sultan of Shouting. Because while there may be no I in team, thanks to you, there's always an F and a U. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back here at Real Racing USA Live, and
we're going real racing.
We're going real racing. We've gone lawnmowers, we've gone straight lining. Now we're going to the Stellar Premier, my favorite dirt late model racing, and one of my favorite dirt late model racers, the Iceman Jimmy Mars. Jimmy, welcome to Real Racing USA.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good, but not as good as your season this year. 14 big wins for you this year.
Yeah, I can't complain. It was a lot of wins and a lot of top fives, a lot of top tens. Just a good year all the way around.
Jimmy, you basically, what were you hitting, the big races this year?
I've been pretty much the last probably 3 years been running the same type of a schedule, just where racing makes sense. Try to put a string of races together. The way the price of fuel and stuff is right now, we're not really hopscotching around anywhere. We try to put a string of races together or just go to the major events.
Yeah, well, I know, you know, I catch the Winter Nationals here at East Bay quite a bit and up in the Volusia, and it's easy to see that you're one of the more popular drivers just by the T-shirts that I see in the grandstands.
Well, you know, we have a pretty decent fan following, and we try real hard to represent our team both good on the track and off the track, and I guess you know, you have fans that like you, and there's race fans that you know, cheer for their other favorite drivers.
You know, I look at some of the accomplishments you got. I mean, going back to 94, some of the great wins you had. But your most memorable moment, it looks like, had to be the 1997, rather, winning the Dream 100.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you know, really every win that I do or have, you know, means a lot to me. But that is one that definitely sticks out in my head, and I've had some other ones that maybe haven't paid quite as much, but have been some awesome races that we've had.
What's some of the top races you've had in your career?
Well, just some of them, you know, you start out through the night and maybe be down and out and have some bad luck and got to just work through the trials and tribulations and maybe come back up through the race and actually win the main event. That's the ones that... you know, are just as much of a highlight as the big money wins.
Right. You know, and a lot of that happens, like, at the Winter Nationals at East Bay. You know, we get over 100 and some cars come down here. The qualifying, the B mains, the C mains, and all that. The alphabet mains, basically, is what we call them. And that year that you won the 1999 Stars Championship here at East Bay, that was a big one, too.
It definitely was. We had a real tough week, and by the end of the week, we got our car and myself where we need to be and put ourselves in position to win that show and actually had an oil fitting that was coming loose and seeped some oil out, and the car was smoking and it was still won a deal, so that was it was definitely a highlight in my career, especially down there.
Now, what's it like these week-long shows where you come in and... you run all these preliminary races and stuff. How hard is that on the driver and the crew?
Well, it's tough because you're racing every night, but the nice thing is that you do get a routine put together and you're not really having any traveling time. So that definitely is a plus, but it's definitely a lot of work. You know, everybody's so intense at the beginning of the year and trying to just get a good start to the beginning of the year, and there, a lot of guys are, you know, really driving aggressive, and you end up with a lot of body damage more so than what you would once the season gets going and everybody calms down a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely the body panel business is pretty big in dirt late model racing.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I say, I mean, you know, everybody starts the year out, and you know, their elbows up, and ready to race as hard as they can, and then they, like I say, they calm down and realize that that's probably not the exact way to do it, but tearing equipment up and stuff. But you see a lot of that at the beginning of the season. But yeah, it's just that as far as every night, it's a good deal that you're not doing traveling, but at the same time, it's still a lot of work.
Well, definitely a lot of work. And you know, the difference in those week-long shows that for you guys, that you dirt late model drivers, and say the asphalt guys, is you're running a different track every night, just about. You know, as far as the way the setup of the track is.
It definitely is that way. With my schedule, it's a little bit more flexible now, so I can set my my schedule how I want to race. If the weather looks bad somewhere, I'm not into points hunt at all. So I if it looks bad, I just stay home and race around closer to home. I don't travel long ways away. I know a lot of them touring series is set up that way, and we've been down that road and done that, and until we get a major sponsorship again to follow a series like that, we're happy with what we're doing.
What are the major traveling series for dirt racing late models nowadays, besides the World of Outlaws?
World of Outlaws is definitely one of the more touring series. That it's not just a regional deal. I mean, they're all over the country. Lucas Oil is another one. And then, I mean, you have WDRL. You have a bunch of different smaller touring series. They're just as, I would say, as classy of a show as any of the major ones. It's just that they're more on the regional side. But what we do is we try to just bounce in and out of each touring series. That's the way our schedule is set up right now.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen, like, when Habit Tampa finally went away and the UDTRA and stuff, have you seen it spread out more?
It definitely has. There's getting to be some stability again with it, but it was going in the right direction there for a while, and a lot of people, you know, stuck their chest out and thought they were going to do a better job and go other directions, and I think payoff-wise it probably hurt. It's not as well as what it was here probably 3-4 years ago. Payoffs were going in the right direction, and now payoffs are kind of going south, and the cost of racing and everything else is going up, so that part of it concerns you a little bit.
And that's got to concern you because, you know, in the dirt late models, I mean, we've always had the big, huge money races and stuff, and you see them still advertising those big races, but you don't see them advertising the payoffs like they used to.
Exactly. It's a tough deal. You know, what's the best answer to say to it? Well, we don't know. I mean, we just got to work real hard at trying to have wins or top fives, and that's how you're going to make a living. You're not going to make a living by being a field filler by any means.
Yeah, now you, in the 70 events that you ran, 70-plus events you ran this year, somebody was asking us, East Bay just had a big Storm Pay Crate late model race there.
Sure.
It was like 75 cars, and somebody was asking, like, talking about that, and every one of these races that you go to, you have to go in there and make the field on every one of those, right? I mean, they all got more cars showing up than are going to start.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you're not guaranteed anything when you show up there just because you're there. I mean, you got to work your tail off to get in the show, and I mean, you got to be running competitive from the time that you get there. I mean, that's what's so meaningful when you have some of them nights that maybe you are struggling starting out and barely getting the show and come from, you know, the back in the starting field and work your way up to win. So that part of it is definitely meaningful. So it's a tough deal. I mean, you just don't show up and think you're just going to make the show.
So even the Iceman feels the pressure of making the show.
Oh yeah, you definitely. It's definitely a relief to get in the show, and you know, I take it as steps. I mean, I try to do my job in qualifying and get a decent starting spot for the heat race. For the main, you know, to get qualified to the main event, and then so I get that step done, and if I get step as far as my heat race, a good qualifying spot in that, and then that puts you into the feature, and then you got to be elbows up to try to get a feature win there. So you know, I definitely take it as steps. I mean, I don't just take it anything as a give me.
Now, what do you attribute the great fan following you got, Jimmy?
I'm not for sure. I mean, I guess I'm pretty much an approachable person, and try to have a good time, and you know, try to put on a show when I'm at the racetrack. You know, I don't go out and try to tear people's equipment up there and try to run as hard as possibly I can do, and whatever I don't have in talent, I try to make up with just sheer energy. So that's what we try to do.
That's the way to do it, brother. Now, where did Jimmy Mars start racing? Where did it start for you?
We started up here in Menominee, Wisconsin, at Red Cedar Speedway.
And what did you start out in?
I started out in the street stock in the entry level. Started out when I was 13 years old, so been at it for a while.
Yeah, you've been running around the track a while.
Sure.
When did you move up into the late models?
1991, when I was 19 years old. So we've been in the late model too for a while, and like I said, I can't complain with the way things have went for us.
Now, your late model, compare, what's the differences in your late model and the crate late model?
Really, there's not a whole lot of difference. There's some body specifications, and probably the biggest difference between the two is the actual motors. Ours are more of a full-blown, you know, more of an outlaw style motor where we put out quite a bit of power, and the crate late model have got a specified lower horsepower motor that it's a little bit more reliable, but at the same time, I mean, you know, a lot of people, they go there to watch the high speeds and everything else. So I mean, there's Each one of them's got their pluses and each one of them's got their minuses. So, but they're both, you know, it's good race. I mean, it's good racing, I guess, all the way across.
How many miles you put on the road in a typical season?
Anywhere from 35,000 to 40,000 miles.
That's cruising around the country,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
What's your favorite track?
That's a hard one to say. I guess anyone at that given night that you can pass on,
yeah,
or that you win at. I guess
that would put you on the spot a little bit, don't it, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean it's hard to pass up my home track here at Red Cedar Speedway. Any time that I get the opportunity to come back and race at that, it's just a pleasure to race it, and still a big supporter of that track. And it's just an old fairground track, but it's just action-packed and good racing pretty much every time we're there.
It's really funny. You know, we have a few other shows we do, and we took one of our co-hosts this past weekend, very first time, and she's a radio personality at one of the country stations, and she does stuff with us too. We took her up to East Bay Raceway for this big dirt late model race. She'd never been to one before. Jimmy, you know, it's like a kid in a candy store, man. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's so funny to see that. It made me remember the first time I ever saw dirt late models. And like Rick said, I mean, if there was nothing else, if it was only that was the only kind of racing there was, it'd be okay.
I'd be happy with
that. I could live with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so much fun to watch you guys go out there and do that.
Sling them big cars around 2-3 wide. I mean, it's constant racing all the time in a dirt late model
and
race.
We get the opportunity, you know, fortunately, we get the opportunity to be in the infield, to, you know, taking pictures at times and being up pretty close to you guys when you're coming around. Like, you know, you come off a turn two at East Bay, and it's amazing, man. Wheels off the ground all the way down. It's just fun to watch, I tell you.
Sometimes, I'm in the car having a good time when I'm racing it, and then I enjoy watching them too, and sometimes I just wonder, man, are we actually going that fast? Am I going that fast when I'm in the car? But, yeah, it's pretty wild racing sometimes.
Yeah, it is. I asked Chubb Frank one time, I said, so how do you see out of the window when you're coming out of two and the front wheels are off the ground? He goes, I don't.
yeah, that's I can concur to that. He probably don't see sometimes, I wonder.
So you're still living in Wisconsin?
Yes.
Yeah. Something about that Wisconsin air, I'm telling you, I'll tell you what. Breeds racers, man.
Breeds late model racing.
I'm telling
dirt
you.
And asphalt.
Dirt and asphalt, yep.
Yeah, we have a good racing background up here in Wisconsin, and we live and breathe it there, that's for sure.
So you'll be coming down south next month?
That's what we're going to intend to do. We got to try to get everything worked out here and put a schedule together, and that's what we'll try to be doing.
All right. Maybe we'll be talking to you in the winner's circle down at East Bay or Volusia.
Sounds good.
All right. Jimmy Mars, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, man.
Bye.
All right. He's a race car driver, man.
Oh, boy.
He is fun too. To watch. They all are, though. You know,
yeah.
they all are. You know, that back end gets up in the air and that front tire comes off the ground and they're just going three wide and slinging dirt and dust in the air. It's a sight to behold. There's nothing like dirt late model racing.
The fans are different, too.
Yeah. Oh,
from,
yeah.
From an asphalt short race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a whole different thing.
Yep.
Whole different
Keith,
thing.
Where did you first obviously, I don't think you didn't come from Florida.
No, sir. How many people did?
Four.
Four, there's three of them now.
Three left?
Yeah.
Yep.
And,
nope.
their grandparents moved to Miami.
So where are you from? Where did you get involved in racing, and what kind of tracks, and where did you go to?
I grew up in Massachusetts.
We're sorry.
Yeah, I know. A little chilly up there right now.
Yeah.
Started out with my uncle and my father. Actually, my uncle racing back at Seekonk Speedway.
I've heard that name several times.
That place has been around for eons.
Yep.
Raced with them for quite a while when I was a kid growing up, and my uncle got out of it. Then I get into what's now Featherlight. Well, it used to be Featherlight. I forgot who's got the. It's Whalen, right?
Whalen.
It's
yeah.
got the deal now for yeah. the modifieds. Running with a couple of guys back then, drag racing with my next door neighbor. I raced carts for a while. After I got on my head a few times, I decided this was not for me.
Right.
Kept doing that. for a little while, then I got into fire service and had a family and had to get out of it, you know. It's one of those choices you got to make.
Insurance priorities sometimes.
Yep, yep.
So what do you think about this new insurance deal that's coming up with the 14-year-old deal?
If they want to do something, why'd they wait till the last race of the year to do it?
Right.
Yeah. Because that just, you know.
It doesn't make, well, what doesn't make sense to me is, okay, they're gonna regulate stock car racing, and maybe it needs to be done. I don't know. I don't know why the insurance companies picked now to do it when it's been happening for so long. I do remember at one time at East Bay with Stan Kolin, there was an up-and-coming driver, and he was only 13 years old. And his dad bought him a full-blown sprint car, and they wouldn't even let him on the track to practice. Insurance wouldn't. So, I mean, it's not that far out of bounds. It's been around for a while.
Well,
but what I want to know is, okay, they're going to do this, but isn't there insurance on go-kart racing?
The insurance issue is a wide problem.
What
you look at the local track, you know, you and I have frequented, you know. You get into a beef with a guy on the track, 40-year-old guys run all the 20-year-old guys, and a 13-year-old kid beats you.
Yeah.
What takes you out?
Yeah.
Now you want to go level the score up, and you go, well, wait a minute, the kid's only 13 years old. We can't play.
Right.
When you're on the track, you're equals. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
When
that's
you
what
get
Augie
off
Grill
the track,
said.
That's
yeah,
what
Augie
when you get
Grill
off
said.
The track, you know, when you're out of that deal, you're not equals. The problem is that you're still a 13-year-old kid or 14-year-old kid driving that truck,
yeah,
and they get hurt.
You hurt a kid.
The injuries are a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
I don't totally agree with letting 14-year-old guys run with adult men in full-size vehicles. That's my own personal thing. I wouldn't let my kid do it, but that's me. And as long as the option's there and the kid's going to try and make his way to get up to, get, you know, climb the ladder to do something better and better and better, and mom and dad get the money or the sponsors, they're going to have that around.
Well, there's, I mean,
where do you draw that line?
Right, where do you draw the line? Because there are some kids out there that are qualified to run with them.
They're
guys.
Pretty damn good.
Real damn good.
Yes.
The thing that I've always thought, and I've always said, and I've said this time and time again, is, you know, there ought to be some kind of licensing procedure or something for these upper classes, the supers, the limiteds, sprint cars, you know, and the trucks. I mean, those are the upper, those are the faster vehicles,
right,
where the people have the most money invested. And there ought to be some way, because, I mean, they do it in drag racing. You can't just put a 14-year-old kid in the top fuel car.
Right.
And you don't see it. You don't see it.
Well, where are the feeder series in a lot of these things coming now? Once you get to karts, I mean, maybe you get to the highest level of karts that are around there.
Right.
After that, what are you going to do? A micro sprint? A mini sprint?
Yeah. Legends.
You know,
legends. Yeah.
What do you do for late model racing? There's
right.
nothing unless
There's
you're
going
to run.
Nothing in between, right?
Nothing in between.
Which they kind of tried to do with the ASA series, which had some 14-year-old kids racing in it, 15-year-old kids. What I'm wondering is, because this is, I mean, you know, there's only like three or four insurance companies that insure, maybe less than that, racetracks. You know, maybe only two. You know, K&K, Nationwide, and.
Well, you got Weisenberg. There's a few of them out there that have emerged.
But
like some of them
gonna,
weren't at the show
are
the
they
other
gonna
day.
Take this whole thing national? You know, and if they do, the effects are gonna be widespread on stock car racing.
Right.
Widespread, especially like in the ASA and series like that, which are feeder series, developmental series and the such.
Most of the time you're gonna see a lot of the insurance issues driven by claims.
Yeah.
Now, have there been a lot? And I don't know this myself. I'm asking you. Maybe you know. Has there been a lot of claims out there with
kids? I haven't seen. You know, to be honest with you,
what's the reason for the switch?
I do not know, because I really haven't seen a lot of kids hurt bad to where, you know, it's made national news or anything. There's been a broken leg here, that's going to happen with a 40-year-old guy. It's going to happen with a 14-year-old kid. But like you said, that's somebody's kid. Now
you wreck somebody's kid. It's a whole different feeling if you wreck somebody's father or son or just another racer. But because when a kid's out there running like that, he's not just another racer. He's somebody's kid.
Yeah. And that's the way I would look at it. You know, it's, you know, and there's guys out there racing that are not going to look at it like that. That's another helmet in a car. That's the only way they're looking at it.
What you might find here, and I don't know this, but I know the topic's been brought up. somebody going to have to pay more money because they wrecked somebody's kid and hurt somebody's kid, or God forbid a kid dies versus another racer? Is the money payout bigger for an insurance company?
Well,
is there another issue going on here that people, I mean, we're trying to get them to get some stuff squared away with just the general safety issues at the track.
Some of it
turning around and going back to the kid issue, you know?
You deal in this stuff, but to me, there's this one thing that just keeps coming up. Now, we've talked about this with how many people, Rick, over this year. We've talked to young people, old people. We ask almost everybody that comes on this show this thing about the kids, right?
Right.
And the thing that I kind of came to here recently was, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Right.
And there are plenty these days. Florida high schools are set up, and that's where we live. Florida high schools are set up where you go 10, 11, and 12th grade. Ninth graders are in what's called middle school.
Right.
When I went to high school, ninth grade was part of high school. Okay. Ninth graders could make junior varsity football, right?
Right, right.
Just because a ninth grader can go play, ninth graders can't go play varsity football, even though a lot of them could. But they're not allowed to.
Yeah, you got to be JV at least.
Same kind of deal.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a visual here that we've seen with a couple of local tracks that the kid's running. A kid, when he comes off the track, jumps out of the truck, jumps out of the car, whatever, jumps in the back of the trailer and starts playing video games.
Yeah.
Dad, uncle, mom,
that's
whatever.
That's one of the other
working
things.
Working on the car. Junior is not lifting a finger, just jumps in the car and wheels it.
And that, we've talked to a lot of people, a lot of drivers that totally agree with you on that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they're not earning this level that they're at, where if they were in a feeder series, we talked about something, they had to get their hands dirty.
There's all kinds of reasons why a 14-year-old kid, even if he can.
Right.
Okay, and I'll tell you an example is Drew Brennan. Drew Brennan can ride a race car. I mean, the kid can do it. He's 14. He can do it.
He can do it. He can do it with the best of them.
But
the races.
He is the exception, not the rule. And, I mean, I think that, you know, it's just a no-brainer that they shouldn't do it. I agree with the deal. But anyway, we got to going to take a left turn here and go back to some dirt stuff again. Kenny has called us in and has got some breaking news with the new dirt series.
All right.
Yeah. What's the deal, Ken?
Well, what I did this weekend, I went over to that crate race over at East Bay, you know, and I was
Shame on you. I didn't see you.
Oh, I was there, buddy. I definitely was there checking it out. But what we did is we picked up a sponsor, which will be announced later in the week. But they want the points fund to start at $10,000 to win. So that's our new deal. It's come out. We've met and, you know, made the agreement, and it's going to be a $10,000 to win, $5,000 for second, so down.
Wait. Ken, you got to tell everybody what dirt series we're talking about.
I got you. The United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series. And, we started out in, you know, the National Late Model Series. Some of the other series had a little leg up on us, you know, and this is something we wanted to announce, you know, to get if drivers were on the edge on which way to go or, you know, check our points deal out, you know. We've doubled our points to win, you know, and then in a couple weeks our rookie points fund will be announced. And, I just want to give you guys a couple. To be honest with you, man, I'm sitting on top of my house looking at the Caloosahatchee River putting up Christmas lights thinking about racing.
And you call Real Racing USA Live because you know we'll answer the phone.
There you go.
That's pretty cool, man.
$10,000 to win points championship. That is awesome.
Yes, sir.
I know there's one excited, there's one dirt track promoter in the South who right now is not thinking about Christmas or anything like that. He's thinking about dirt racing, and you know who that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Peters up there at Ocala.
Yes, sir. We talked a little bit Friday. I'm still, you know, my persuasion is I'm trying to get him to let us open up our series in Ocala that Friday night. And that's still my goal. I'm going to keep pushing him until he says yes. But that's my big deal. I really want to open up in Ocala.
All right.
Yeah, me and Mike been talking about that. And then I had a little conversation just for the drivers out there and fans. I had a lot of conversation with Ray Miller over at East Bay, you know, runs the National Late Model Series, and we talked about at the end of this year coming together and having a big all-star event between the National Late Model Series and the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series, and at the end of the year having a, you know, big payoff for the drivers and, you know, going that route.
You keep going, man. We're going to be seeing you at racetracks with coat and tie on.
I hear you. I came into this as a driver with a driver's mentality. I've got a business mentality in my business, but from racing, it's always been my hobby and to race, and I know what the racers are looking for, you know, and I'm going to try to provide an alternative for them, and, you know, we'll probably make a few hiccups along the way, but, we're working on a deal with Hoosier. We talked to American Racer, different tire companies at the show this week, and, you know, we're trying to make some other deals, you know, where we can put some money back in the driver's pocket, you know.
So, cool.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, Ken.
All right, take care, guys.
Get back on that Christmas lights.
Yeah, man. Don't fall off that roof, brother.
No, sir. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, Ken Kenny, the man with two names. Now, this thing right here.
Two first names.
The man with two first names.
Yeah, I shouldn't talk. Always,
everybody's got two names.
I shouldn't talk.
Yeah. Quit it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Jack, we're going to take a few weeks off here at Real Racing USA.
We keep trying to. Yeah. I hope so. We got so many things. We have so many things. It's like not really taking time
we're
off.
We're trying to line up this. The second greatest promoter next to Tom Stymus. And
there's that. But, you know, even taking time off from shows like this, there's so many things that go on behind the scenes to make all this stuff kind of, like, come together. And when you look at what, again, we just say it again. I mean, at the beginning of this year, you know, we wanted to do certain things with these shows on Real Racing USA.
Right.
And we've done most of them. Mm-hmm. And in some areas, we've gone way beyond what our expectations were.
Oh, the guest list just for this year was just...
Yeah.
The people we've had on this show and on Inside Florida Racing and Straight Lining with Stevie, the ASA.
You got to go pretty far up the food chain. There's a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good internet racing radio. There's a lot of good people. You know, guys up there at racetalkradio.com and various other people doing a great job.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, you're going to have to go a little bit up the food chain to get the kind of guest list, the volume of guest lists that we've had. It's pretty cool.
That's ain't no doubt about it.
We're going to come back in a few minutes with Mickey Kane from the ASA.
You would throw that at me.
Southeastern
Plus
Tour.
Tour. ASA Southeast Asphalt Tour. They're embarking on their 2008 debut, and we'll get more on that when we come back here on Real Racing USA Live. Real Racing USA Live back on the airwaves, and with us right now We had let's go back a couple weeks with when we had Dennis Huth on the line with us, and he told us about the ASA and all the different aspects of it and stuff. And
great 45-minute interview.
Great interview, and he told us a little bit about the Southeast Asphalt Tour Series that was coming. And big news coming out today with us is Mickey Kane. Mickey, how are you doing tonight?
Doing fine. How about y'all guys?
We're doing real good. Tell us a little bit about the breaking news.
Well, the ASA Asphalt Tour, Southeast Asphalt Tour, is mine and John Key and Stan Narrison and, of course, Dennis Hoop, our interpretation of what asphalt late model racing needs to get to get the recognition it deserves and get the drivers the recognition they deserve.
Now, what's your interpretation of that?
Basically, straight rail late models like you see from, coast to coast, from the tip of Florida all the way up to Maine to California and back to the shores of the Carolinas. There are straight rail late model cars sitting in garages everywhere with either, places they've closed down and they don't let them run there no more, or they've all went to, a spec type deal, and these people want to race and they want somewhere to race, so we're going to make them a place to race.
Yeah, we talked to Augie Grill, and that was one of the things he brought up, that that late model racing has lost that niche, has lost that place to race. You still got your Snowball, you still got your Governor's Cup, you still got Nashville, but it's nothing like it used to be back when Bob Harmon in the All-Pro Series days.
Yeah, well, I mean, when Bob was rocking and rolling with the All-Pro deal, I was just starting out racing. And I've watched it basically dwindle down to where promoters struggle to get 20, 25 cars to a show, and they, if they get 1,200 people in the bleachers on a regular, throughout the summer show, not a special event show, then they're tickled to death.
Yep.
And it's got to get back to where, with the proper promotion, which is what we're basing all this off of, with John Key, who's our marketing man, and the founder of the series, him and Dennis Heath, we're going to get this back to real racing the way people want it to be.
I like to hear that, real racing.
Right.
Real racing, yeah. Because,
We've been talking to a lot of dirt people at Rick, and 75 cars, 60 cars showing up, 50 cars, not all. It's just common. So,
and yeah, well, you can tell that the asphalt late models are there. 70 cars showing up for the Snowball Derby alone.
Mickey, last month, I sat down and. Because somebody, one of the promoters I was talking with, I got off the phone, and we sat down and we listed out all of, just here in Florida, all of the late model drivers that we knew of who had cars. And there we came up with 125, and I know we didn't get them all.
No.
And it's, like you said, it's tough to get 20, 25 on a regular show kind of deal for a 100-lap race or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what, that's the mentality we're going into this thing with. I mean, we have put a rules package together to where anything can come race from the 604 crate motor up to a full-blown super late model. I mean, I think I've got 20-some-odd years in racing experience. John's been in a long time. Stan, he was promoter of a track here in North Georgia for quite a while, as I promoted the track in North Georgia for a while. And I think through carburation, weight, we can make this thing where basically if you got a straight rail late model sitting at your house, we want you to come race. We don't want nobody to be able to say, well, I'd love to go race with them guys, but my stuff just won't fit their rules pack.
Now, you're strictly going to keep this in the Southeast, though?
For this first year, it will, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm reading it. Basically, what I'm reading into this and what we talked to Dennis about, he's looking for something to replace the national tour that the ASA once had.
Yeah, well, I mean, our deal is, a lot like the ASA Midwest Tour that Dennis is associated with as well. and we've got two races this year that the two, the Southeast, Midwest, and the Northwest are, will run in conjunction together. One of the races being at Iowa, and another race being at a track to be announced here in the next upcoming week or so. But that will be what we all envision as the resurrection of the old ASA National Tour.
That'd be awesome. That Midwest Tour, that had quite a following this year. It was really popular.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, we sat down with Tim Olson and Lumpy and all the guys from that, along with Dennis, and put this rules deal together to where I think it's going to work. And then, you know, we've been in contact with several of the engine builders around in the area. Mike Cope's brother and some of the people that build the spec motors that they run down in Florida. The sealed engines that McGonagall and Jeff Havner build. You know, we're going to make it where, like I say, if you've got a late model, straight rail late model car, I don't care what motor combination's in it, we'll figure out a way to let you race and race competitive.
That's the way to do it.
Mickey, for us folks, Rick understands all this stuff when you go straight rail.
Yeah.
I'm one of them fans that don't know what that means. What's that mean?
Well, the right side frame rail comes right off the front clip and goes all the way back to the tail clip, whereas a Sprint Cup car or a Nationwide type car has got an equal kick out on each side. Straight rail car is built more for, you know, left turn.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Versus a perimeter deal.
Yeah. Got a TV package, looks like it's coming together for this thing, too.
Yeah, the TV package will be with Rick Benjamin and his company, Carolina Productions. I think just about everybody in that follows Short Track Racing knows who Rick Benjamin is, and him and Scott Sutherland will be doing the commentary on the races that we televise. It'll be basically go from New England, draw a line over to the Mississippi and down, and it'll be on all the regional sports networks in that area.
Now, the important thing about that TV package that we've all seen over the years with Hooters, with ASA, with ARCA, NASCAR, it brings the sponsors to these guys so they can race and they can travel.
Exactly. I mean, we've got a package put together for the competitors as they come and as they get in contact with me, Stan, or John, to where we will send them that package and they can present it to their sponsors to help the guys get the sponsors they need to, you know, compete in this thing.
It's been a long time since we've seen an Exide or a Tide or something on a late model car.
Oh, yeah. It'd be great to see some of the, you know, there are a lot of big-name corporate sponsors out there that have got priced out of the upper echelons of racing. And they know racing's good, and they know it's a good market to be in. But the cost of, you know, a Sprint Cup or a Nationwide deal has run them out of racing. They just can't afford to compete with it. This will put them back in there where they can get back in the limelight and get their product in front of the consumer again.
No doubt about it. Now, the tracks, you got some great tracks on the schedule. Watermelon Capital Speedway, South Georgia Motorsport, Hickory, Sonoya, Dillon, Music City, Concord, Anderson, of course, right down here in our own neck of the woods, Bronson Motor Speedway, but you got the big road course race.
Oh, yeah, that's something that, you know, it started out as something I always wanted to do back when I raced, and now it's turned into everybody that calls, that's what they're most excited about. They're all excited about going and doing a road course. I mean, it makes them, you know, a little bit of a novelty to it, but it's going to be a points-paying race. So, you know, they're going to have to bring their A-game.
There you go, because down here in Florida, the Sun Belt Series for a few years there, we ran at Sebring, and that was always a big fan pleaser.
Yeah, I think it's over at, you know, the folks at Kershaw, South Carolina over there. They are, right now as we speak, they are widening the turns and repaving the track. Help it lend itself more to better racing, and it'll be the first event that the people at the track over there have had that they're actually going to allow spectators to.
All right, yeah, because that's basically a testing facility, right?
Yeah, a testing facility and a you know, a little private SCCA, you know, where they come in and rent the track for the weekend and stuff like that.
Yeah,
this will be a full-blown spectator event, and I think it's going to be a good deal, and it's going to be on TV, too.
That's going to be a big one. I can see it coming already. Now, what about tires? What are we looking at for tires for this class?
Well, there'll be a four-tire, you know, four-tire per race. The F45 Hoosier. You know, we've already got the deal with Hoosier done. Gary Freeman and Jeff Freeman at Hoosier Asphalt South. I've worked real close with them back when I run the Georgia Asphalt Series, and Stan worked real close with them back whenever he was running Lanier. So, you know, we got a pretty good tire deal, and the tire we're going with is a better tire than what everybody's used to on the old 2045 Hoosier. This tire is about a half a second a lap quicker, and it don't fall off but about two-tenths a lap. So I think the boys will be able to race long and race hard on that tire.
No doubt about it. You know, like I said, I'd definitely be at that Bronson race. You couldn't keep me away from this. This sounds like it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, and there's one track in Florida we really want to go to, and we're really working hard. John has been working all day on it, and big three-quarter mile down there in the middle of Florida. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about now, Lakeland.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, buddy.
We're trying to get some stuff put together to have an event down there, and then
it's the jewel.
We're working real hard with Timmy Bryant over at Pensacola to have an event over at Pensacola as well. So,
yeah, that's a late model racetrack right there.
Billy Martino needs some more to do down there at Lakeland.
Right? Yeah, he does.
That's cool.
Well, if people want more information on this, Mickey, or anything else they want to know about it, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of the series?
They can go to our webpage, which is www.asasoutheastasphalttour.com, and all the information, they can get that off the contacts page, along with the press release regarding the payouts for the events and all that stuff, and the points payout will be coming up here in the next week or so.
Well, we definitely
sounds good.
We definitely want to see this one take off because
the TV packages.
The TV package, you know, is a big deal of it.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of the racers who raced in the other series last year, and just feeling them out. And this was before I knew you had the TV package confirmed, and that was the one thing they said. You know, that's. If they can get a TV, the guys who really want to go somewhere, who got some dreams here they're following, they're going to go where the TV is. It's very, very important.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that was the one thing that John, you know, put on top of his list when we come together to start this deal was, you know, if I can't put the TV deal together, there's no sense doing it. So that was priority one from the get-go, was to get the TV package put together to ensure that deal happen. Because without the TV package, you're just another fly-by-night racing series coming along with the way we feel about it.
And we definitely have seen enough of them come and go.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, Mickey. Thanks a lot. We'll be back in touch with you guys, I'm sure. Maybe we can get in touch with John right after we come back from Christmas break and have him on our show and get his point of view on all this because you know, it's all about promotion and putting people in the seats, man, and having making a good place for the cars, the guys to go race their cars.
Exactly. That's the goal we're striving for.
All right, Mickey. And if you ever need any help, you know how to get a hold of us, brother.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Now, this is one I'm looking forward to right here. This is going to be...
Be nice to see more people in stands and race cars on the track.
Well, the other thing is... what really is exciting about this is the TV deal is going to – I can remember when we had, you know, the Hooters thing started with late models. You know, you had the Miller sponsorships. You had
right.
the Tide. You had these cars out there with big sponsors, the Exide car. It makes all the difference in the world. It does because the time we're living in now, the expenses these guys are, you know, are put through. I mean, you're talking traveling from here to North Carolina – Missouri, Iowa, you know, that's a lot of riding.
You know, in the state of Florida, about 10, 11 years ago when Bobby Deal started his truck deal,
he would have people laughed at him. Well, and some people still make fun of the whole deal. One of the keys that made his whole deal work was that TV, as limited as it was.
Right.
Because
right.
the drivers, they wanted to go, and they could sell sponsorships, even at that level.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. If you're going to put your sponsor's name out there and on the TV, that's free TV time to a sponsor.
Speaking of sponsorship, the master of acquiring sponsorship dollars, Terry Wall, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm trying to survive the weekend at the PRI show, but it's tough on us fat old man, huh?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was good seeing you, Terry.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, good.
So did you get to catch any of the interview there with Mickey Kane from the ASA Southeast Asphalter?
Oh, yeah. I caught some of that interview.
So you've read the press releases.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they got a marketing package together, it looks like. They got a TV package together. And
right. I didn't catch who that TV package was with.
It's Rick Benjamin and Scott Sutton. Well, Rick Benjamin with Carolina Productions. I know that you're familiar with that whole
right,
deal.
Right.
And was that who we worked with on that one thing?
No.
Okay. And Scott Sutherland is, I guess, the other announcer involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And all over the eastern United States in the regional markets.
Yeah. Well, that's they should be commended for that. They put that together that quick.
Well, John, the what Mickey said, and we're going to have to talk with John later, you know, like at the beginning of the year, but he did say, if I got that right, Rick, that John Kay, is that his name, Kay?
Key.
John Key. Yeah, he had the, he's like the promotion angle of this whole thing, and that was number one on his list. Mickey said that if he couldn't get a TV deal, there wasn't no sense doing it. So that was number one on the list.
Right. Well, that's like you guys were talking, that's got to be number one on the list, because that way now drivers can go to potential sponsors and their sponsors and say, hey, we're going to be doing on this deal on TV now. I need more money, or I need to get some money, because you're going to have the advertising on television, and it's going to be a lot easier for the drivers to do that now.
It was funny, Terry, when I was sitting there listening to them talk about that TV thing, and it reminded me of the time when you and I worked together on that project to get the television package for the Governor's Cup in 1998,
right.
And how many people did not want it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still flabbergasted by that, how people who actually were racing, man, and were trying to go somewhere, didn't want the TV package. It was like...
Well, evidence of that is I went around weeks before the actual TV race and passed out flyers that, hey, this race is going to be on television. We need you to show up and get some free TV time for your sponsors. And I don't know how many cars show up now, but we only had 23 cars.
Yeah.
Show up at that Governor's Cup race with full fledged television.
Yeah, but it's changed a lot now. There's no question.
Was it 1998?
Yeah, it was 98.
Oh, that's when we were both skinnier.
Yeah. So this, what do you think about this whole deal with this ASA?
Well,
asphalt. Tour.
I have some inside information on all what's going on with both ASAs, and obviously I'm not privileged to tell that on the radio, but it's going to be a mess. It really is, and there's a lot of things going to happen in the next few weeks that is really, in my opinion, going to be a detriment. Jack, you're the media guy. Say that word.
Detriment.
Detriment. To both parties, and little by little, everything's going to be coming out, and I really don't know what to think right now, Rick and Jack.
Well, go into your crystal ball and tell us the thing that I want to know is, and this is a question I keep asking. You know, we've all been around this game long enough to know that the promoters do what the promoters do, and all like that.
Right.
How is it going to affect the drivers?
Well, I think in the short term, it's going to affect the drivers very little as far as they're going to make their choices of who they're going to be with and what they're going to do. Obviously, the television package that the Southeast has put together is going to be very attractive to the driver. But long term, it really is going to affect the drivers, because some of them are going to be in the middle of seasons with either organization, and the ball is going to be dropped one way or another, and then everything will be in chaos, and that's my prediction.
Oh, okay. So
you think that it's going to happen that quick? You don't think it's going to be drawn out over the years, or do you think one is going to be forced to stop?
Rex and Brian Robbins, who had the original ASA, wants it done quick. And I think one of the heads of one of the ASAs is so mad right at the moment that he's going to want to get it done quick. And it will, I think, by the first of the year, everything will be out on the table. One of the organizations, yes, Rick, wants it drawn out as much as possible. That's to their advantage, and they'll spend a lot of money to do that.
Okay, so that's cryptic enough. We'll leave it at there.
Okay.
And so now, back to the PRI deal.
Right.
Did you make a ton of money?
Not yet. I was sort of lost in that deal. I thought I'd go down and get checks made out to me right there at the show, but that's not the way it works.
Me too.
You go down and press the flesh and talk to people, and you come home and call them and close the deals. And I'm going to do well once everything gets rolling here.
But your specialty is the telephone anyway.
Yes.
I mean, you work a telephone, man.
Yes.
I mean, I bet you wear a telephone out every 3 or 4 months.
Well, no. Remember, I have this old phone that you hate.
Yeah, that's right. He's got a 30-year-old telephone.
He gets the best out of his phone.
Actually has a good speaker in it, as opposed to these new junky little things you buy now for $39 that are throwaways.
Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't even tell you what. I think I got this at Walmart.
So, what kind of year has 2007 been for Terry Wall in the racing game here?
In the racing game, it's been tremendous. It's been a very special time of getting back with Jack Smith and Rick Angie. I missed that part of my life from when I was in Florida with y'all. Personally, it's been a tragic year. Tragic not in a way. It's just been a rough year emotionally, and as you know, Jack, in our personal conversation today, it took a turn for the worse. But as far as professionally, I'm very excited about the year.
Cool.
I'm excited to work with Real Racing USA and hopefully in a larger role in 2008. Yeah. As you know, I don't know. You can't let the cat out of the bag, but we have a very special announcement coming up in March that is going to benefit at least one driver in the state of Florida at the end of 2008. And that's very exciting to have something new like that. And all the drivers listening in Florida, you got to hear this in March.
And we got a couple of new shows that are on the drawing boards here that I think we're gonna be changing some things we're doing here. I think
is one of them called Trash the Promoter Show?
No, we're not gonna do that.
Oh, okay.
No, we're not gonna do that because you know why we're not gonna do that?
Why is that?
Because it doesn't do any damn good.
Oh, okay. It doesn't work.
What do you think, Rick?
We have to at least once every 3 or 4 months have the Kevin Ruick Hour.
Yeah, we like to pick on Kevin Ruick. He's a promoter. He's a promoter who likes to trash promoters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to listen to Kevin Ruick's
interview.
I think
we should. You know what we should do? We should have a demolition derby of promoters. We'll get Sapricone on. We'll get Kevin Ruick. We'll get Eagle Tie on, and let them all go at once.
Sapricone can drive a Studebaker.
Oh, we get the guys. You mean the message board experts?
Yeah.
On with the promoter experts.
I got a question for both of you.
Go for it.
What was the best or the worst event that happened in the state of Florida racing in 2007?
The best, in my opinion,
yes,
was the ARCA race.
Okay.
I was just thoroughly, thoroughly impressed with the whole thing, being a short track race and everything.
Right.
The worst, the ASA deal at DeSoto, it was just...
tragic.
It was tragic. The whole thing from... I'm not putting any blames towards anybody. It was just...
Just the event itself was tragic.
I was disappointed.
Well, those are two good choices, Rick.
What about... I'll tell you, it was... I mean, I have to think about it, you know, and it's like I'm not taking focus factor.
Right.
So you asked me a question earlier today, and it's like, I'll tell you, I'll give you an answer in a couple of days because it takes that long for it to circulate. The older you get, the more nonsense you have piled up in your head. So somebody asks you a sensible question, and it takes you a while for it to get through all the cobwebs. But
you know, being a media person like you are, Jack, you just went through a media hogwash.
Oh, I know. It's total BS, wasn't it? Total BS,
spin.
But that's
the spin.
The spin. But
are
you know,
for mayor of Bradenton, Jack, or something?
No, but you know, watching Dick Anderson in the winner's circle at the Florida Governor's Cup with this beaming look on his face, with his car, driven by Jeff Chiquette, winning that Governor's Cup, it was like, because I remember when Dick won, when Wayne. You know, when the pride of that.
Right.
I swear the pride looked the same. You know, it and that was a pretty good thing. That was a pretty cool thing to see.
Okay. And what was the worst thing for you? Same as Rick?
Oh, I don't think there's no question about it. I mean,
okay.
That's one of the I mean, just most bizarre things. I mean, it may, for people who weren't there or really weren't involved in the whole deal, I mean, I could...
It was heartbreaking for me.
It was heartbreaking, exactly.
It was heartbreaking.
I stood out there watching the sun. You know, it was one of those nights where in Florida you get these times somewhere where long after the sun is set, there's still light in the sky out over the Gulf, and you got all these colors. And it was one of those kind of nights, and I stood there looking at this thing long after it was dark, looking at the sky, just feeling so depressed at what had happened.
Right.
You know, that was pretty low.
Rick and Jack, is that probably the most bizarre happening in racing, even out of Florida, that you've ever been involved with?
No, I'd have to say it would be, I don't know, it has, comparing it with the 1999 Governor's Cup.
The David Rogers and
I wasn't there for that one.
Yeah,
the Anderson incident.
Yeah, that was those.
That was probably to me. That was the most bizarre thing that I've ever experienced in racing. It was just
it was pretty off.
And like
charts.
I say, I'm not throwing any blames in any direction.
Right,
it's just
right.
I just know the buildup I had to it to the ultimate. It was just.
What about you, Keith? I mean, you attend a lot of races. What do you say?
Unfortunately, staying tied in with the truck team I was working with, you don't get a chance to get out and run around a lot, but I did hear about the ARCA race from a few people who were there, and I wasn't around for the ASA race, but if that's the same race I'm thinking of, I didn't hear too many people finally talking about it.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, that ARCA show, I'm still in awe of that to this day. Just the professional.
Oh, it was
way,
cool.
It was way cool.
Well, that was my next question, Rick. Why were you so in awe of the professionalism?
The professionalism of it. You know, you look at it, Terry, and how the Busch Series used to be the feeder series, the minor league, whatever, to the Cup. And now that's gone. That's not what that series is at all. Sure, the truck race does bring some people up, but... This is where they're coming from. I mean, there were some past champions in there and stuff, some veterans, Wayne Anderson and you know, Johnny Jackson and Mario Goslin were there, but Bobby Santos and I still can't remember that kid's name that started on the outside,
Buescher,
that's right. The whole thing went off like clockwork. Everything they did was bam, bam, bam. And the race itself was fantastic.
You know, there was another. There was another thing. God, it seems so long ago. See that?
It's been a long year.
That picture up there, Bobby Sears.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh? That was this year.
Yeah. Yep.
That was this year.
When we gave away the
Orange Blossom, the P-Door race?
Yeah, when we presented, they don't call it the Orange Blossom anymore, as a matter of fact. When we presented the P-Door Sportsmanship Award this past year, which we do every year at the P-Door Memorial Race, which was like the last event of the Fast Cars Asphalt World Series at New Smyrna.
Right.
We presented it to Bobby Sears, who was a car owner nowadays, not a driver, but there was a time when he could not be beat in mini stocks in Florida.
Right.
You know, they paid him to go away. You know?
Yeah, he was number nine, wasn't he?
I think so.
I think. Yeah. But, you know, that was a pretty high point, too, because when we presented that man that award, he had no idea why he was been called down to that circle at New Smyrna in front of thousands of fans. And to see the emotion, that was pretty special.
I really think that Real Racing USA needs to step up a little bit in 2008. The relationship with drivers and fans. I understand last year you did a deal at a lube place.
Yeah, Quaker Steak and Lube.
It was that was a high point. That was definitely wasn't a race, but I'll tell you what, they're still talking about it, and they'll be talking about it until the next one happens.
Didn't some lady come up to you, Jack, and said thank you for being a leader?
Well, that was one of those. Yeah, that was cool. That whole event was cool. That thing to have. I was actually Bill Hunt has finally got the video pretty much done. There's a couple, just two minor little changes, and we're gonna have them available this coming week for people to take a look at and buy.
Right.
But I'll tell you, I watched most of that 3 hours of videotape, and
what a show!
What a show,
three
man!
The videotape. Wow.
Yeah,
it was a 3 hour show.
It was Bill taped about 4 hours or five hours and something like that. But
it's a pizza and beer night. Watching that.
Yeah, we distilled it down to 3 hours. We could have. I watched it. We could have cut it more, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Has lots of interviews with. It wasn't just our show being broadcast on the thing. It was a lot of. Bill Green did a lot of really good interviews.
Yeah, good interviews.
There was a lot of video, and we got some photographs from the old days, and they're included in the video as part of the. It's like a documentary, you know. It's pretty cool. It was an awesome event.
Hey, well, we talked to Marty Little this week, and he's wanting us to come to Hialeah.
Yeah, I mean, they want us to. Yeah, that's right. Talking about coming to Hialeah in this year and doing the same kind of thing down there. Yeah,
sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
I really got homesick being in Florida this past weekend. I talked to my son Chance about possibly moving down there, and he's all for it. But as far as my biggest events in 2007, it really not related to Florida because I'm not there. I'm going to speak a little NASCAR if y'all don't mind.
Go ahead.
I think the biggest event in this year obviously was Dale Earnhardt Jr. moving from DEI, the company that his father founded and was scheduled to be Junior's company. I thought, and the other thing is simply when you look in the stands at a NASCAR race this past year, you see more empty seats than you have forever. I watched on ESPN Classic the race they had in Las Vegas. There wasn't a seat to be had. In fact, there was standing room only. But if you look at the races this year, every race, even Indianapolis, Daytona, Las Vegas, you see empty seat after empty seat.
And, blocks of them. Blocks of empty seats.
Exactly, and that's one of the biggest stories that I have this year. And I don't know where it's going to end. And I think another big story is this ASA thing.
Yeah.
It's huge. And nobody knows where it's going at the moment.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing going right now.
Yep, and I'm a little involved with the ASA now, but keep my ears open and my mouth shut.
There you go.
All right, Terry.
It's good seeing you again, Terry.
Good seeing you, Rick, and I know I'll see you more in 2008 I have to get to Florida.
Looking forward to it, brother.
And it's a deal where I really miss getting involved. And if Jack quits chewing me out, we'll be okay.
Okay.
That'll
okay.
never happen.
Okay. 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 Okay, Terry. See ya.
See ya.
Good night, Terry. You know, one thing.
Terry Wall.
We forgot to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah. Tonight's the last night of Hanukkah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I think we had to wrap up some stuff here with Keith on this 14-year-old thing, or were we done with that? We weren't done with that.
I don't think anybody's going to be done with that for a while.
That's a never-ending story.
Never-ending?
That's never-ending.
Yeah.
That was good.
Have we made any progress this last year or two in on the safety front, do you think, at the local stock car racing level?
Depends on which track you went to, because there's some... The last few shows that I attended as a crew chief on a three truck with Nick, I was ready to throw some stuff at a few people.
Well, and that's, you know,
because they were idiots.
Yeah, and that's one of the things when we were talking about the 14-year-old.
Stupid.
Is, you know, if you're going to race kids, young kids, there's a lot of racetracks all over the country. If you're going to race kids at 13, 14 years of age, even if you can because your insurance agent people let you do it,
right?
There's a lot of places that either got to fix their safety, or there's a major disaster, major headline, major bad stuff for stock car racing sitting on the horizon.
Waiting to happen, yep.
It's just waiting to happen. It's, it's not if, it's when. And there's no. I just don't have any doubt in my mind.
It's just a law of physics.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
A mature body... Mature organs, everything involved, an adult versus a young kid can take a lot more shock and abuse and a wreck than a kid can, period.
Right.
And when you get stupid incidents like one of the tracks down here where practice, and I'm going to take because it was two teammate trucks of mine.
Practice with
and
no
practice
safety.
With just a flagman coming out of pit road, no flagman in the grandstands, nobody hitting the lights. Sun was out, teammate gotten some oil in the track, which wasn't cleaned up, loops it, puts it in the fence right in front of the starter stand and sits there. Guys come around by the flag, the guy standing on the pit road flag, man, don't see him, and they head on and destroy three trucks. Luckily, nobody got hurt. And the following week...
A fire?
No, not at that time.
No, I'm just saying, if a fire...
Well, let's put it this way. The fuel cell in one truck was in the windshield of the truck behind it because of the way that, one, the truck's constructed, and two, of the way because they weren't paying attention. And then the following week, both the fire truck at the track and the tow truck running through a fuel spill. Lucky didn't light the whole joint up.
You know, and all the time I've been doing this stuff, there's one...
That's just common sense stupid.
You're absolutely right. There was one track owner in particular, and he's not the only one who has this level of concern, but Stan Colin... When he owned East Bay Raceway, I remember him sitting in the office one afternoon when somebody had gone out onto the track, they had rented the track, and they were out there. They had rented the track.
Before the ambulance got there.
And they were out on the track before the ambulance and safety people were out there ready, and he went ballistic. Because you weren't allowed to have any cars on the track without safety and fire people.
That was his rule.
That was his rule.
That was his rule.
And that was the way it ought to be.
There are some places up north, and we don't want to do a north-south thing there, but there are some promoters that their insurance will not allow them. We talk about the insurance issue. Their insurance will not allow them to run even a practice without at least one ambulance or two, depending on what the situation is, on the track.
Yeah. Well, particularly...
It's a whole different ballgame throughout the country, but there's no common denominator out there.
So you're still working with Craig Clark and doing all them kind of things and moving forward.
Going to do some work with him on that. Going to be working with Doug Shaw down at Shaw Race Chassis, working with him on some new safety innovations in his chassis. So we're going to work together on some stuff.
Cool.
And trying to move forward.
Keep doing it.
Keep rocking.
That's all we can do, bud.
Well.
Thanks for having me back on the show again. Appreciate
anytime,
it.
Anytime, man.
Pretty cool.
Anytime. Up here in the 7th floor of the Karnak Real Racing USA Tower.
Yep. View of the Gulf. It's sweet.
It's a beautiful view.
It's all the cocktails.
The Christmas decorations.
All the way up to the 8th floor.
I'm telling you.
You did it up out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if we don't get anything lined up for next week, looks like we'll take a few weeks off for the holidays.
Announcement will be made in the next few days.
And want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa,
yep.
Happy New Year. And I'm sure we'll be back soon.
I can't wait for the party.
The party. We're going to have a party.
Ho, ho, ho.
Party. Yeah. Real Racing USA, Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m.
Invitation only.
Invitation only on the Real Racing USA networks.
RealRacingUSA.com.
Good night now. We'll be right back.